Welcome to the HRBR on this lovely Thursday evening. Yes, we're in the virtual studio today, and it's me and David, isn't it, today?
And we're joined by fantastic guest Tracy Buckingham from the Sussex Beacon. Yes. Hello, Tracy.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Oh, we're looking forward to hearing all about what you're up to.
Yes.
Yeah, Josh, how have you been since our last episode?
Not too bad, yeah. Just as I normally say, doing this and that.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a good bank holiday, Josh?
Yeah, no, it's fine. It was, quiet, actually, just pottering. I had a DJ night, a new night at the Brighton Cruise Bar, which is good. Great bar, actually, if you want to... You know, it's men only, actually. It's a membership bar, but, it's a really good bar. So I recommend it to go and give it a whirl. Great, lovely bar.
Oh, good.
So that's the Brighton Cruise Bar and Grand Parade. Just the weather's got a bit funny, hasn't it?
It's autumn, definitely here, yes.
I like autumn. What do you think? You like autumn?
I do. I like the seasons where there's the most change, and then obviously spring and autumn, those seasons. Yeah, yeah.
How about you, Tracy? Do you like autumn?
I do like autumn, but I feel like everything feels like a shock because it goes from almost unbearable heat to suddenly thinking I need to get my cardigans out.
Yeah.
It's definitely layers.
Yeah, today was the first time I wore my jacket since spring, so, yeah. It's
like but I like it. You forget sometimes, because it's been so hot, we've kind of just been going around in our skimpy, well, I have, my skimpy shorts. And then you forget. Yeah. Oh, I love that jacket. Oh, I haven't worn that jacket for ages. Or those shoes, those heavy shoes, or whatever, you kind of can wear.
Yeah.
Things. How are you, David? Anyway, you've been.
I'm good. Yeah. So yeah, the weekend. So I dressed up as a Viking at the weekend.
I went to
a medieval festival at Mickleman Priory, it was just an opportunity to dress up and look like a Viking. I had a cape. And I've always wanted to wear a cape. I had a cape and a fur collar and sort of a Viking doublet type thing. But there were lots of people all dressed up from year 1000 to year 1500. It was really good, and all the kiddies were sort of shouting and booing and hissing at the baddies, and the goodies obviously were winning with their swords and chainmail and stuff. And then what did I do Monday? Oh, Monday I went to see Eisenhower's map rooms at Southwark Park in Portsmouth.
Ooh, cool chap.
Yeah, because there's a film coming out soon called The Pressure, which is about the weatherman who decided when it was the right time to go and do the D-Day landings, and so that was the room where he said, "Yes, it's a go." So, I'm looking forward to seeing the film in the cinema. Tracy, what did you get up to?
I spent my weekend with family, grandchildren, walking dogs.
Nice.
Trying to get some plants for my very sad garden.
Tracy, you currently work for the Sussex Beacon. So for listeners that don't know what the Sussex Beacon is, could you please tell us?
Yes, of course. So the Sussex Beacon is an HIV specific care facility now. It originally opened as a hospice back in 1994, and it was really a call to action by the local community, LGBTQ plus community, who were really rallying around at a time where people who were dying of AIDS weren't accepted into the more generic care facilities, hospices. Mm-hmm. So we have a 10-bedded unit. At the time, we did have a mortuary, which had capacity to hold 4 bodies. That's no longer necessary, thank goodness, but yes. It's an important reminder of the, you know, the struggles that people face back in the day. We also have a incredible community services team, and they are non-clinical staff who do a lot of casework and supporting people with the usual day-to-day issues that are really challenging for people living with HIV.
Yeah, so I remember, so I was diagnosed in 1993, and I remember the Beacon, the campaign to get the Beacon built, because I think at its peak there were 4 people a week dying in Brighton of AIDS at the time, because obviously there was no treatment. So Yeah, I mean, and just to be treated with dignity and proper care, because you know, obviously there was a lot of hysteria in the press and the fear-based campaign. It's quite awful, but I mean, it's been going well 30+ years, 34, 33
32,
years.
33, 33 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I can remember because this is my fourth time working at the Sussex Beacon. And I first started working here in 1999. And quite recently, I found our RIP register.
Oh,
And
really?
I sort of took some time to just sit with it and reflect, the names that I remember. But as you just said, it went from almost two or three a day. But it was you can see the evolving really of antiretrovirals and how those deaths decreased. But yeah, just it's just such a sort of powerful image to see A, my own handwriting
Right.
all that time ago, but just
Yes.
names that really stand out. Yeah, it's important to remember those people.
It is,
Yeah, definitely.
and to remember those times. But we live in very different times now, obviously. And I'm you know, so I've been an inpatient and a service user of the Sussex Beacon for many years in my HIV journey. And what it's so the, and the, because of the success of antiretroviral therapy, there was a sort of almost a move away from calling the Sussex Beacon a hospice, wasn't there? Because of the stigmatization of the word hospice. But
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think because HIV has, we've all had to evolve with HIV, the care, the treatment and the care that people get today is absolutely incredible. And I think probably for a good maybe 6 to 8 years, so I've worked in, just to give a bit of context, I've worked in HIV care in Brighton for 26 years in different various organisations, mainly clinical because I'm a nurse by background. But to my mind, I feel like there was a time where HIV sort of stood still, and people were getting used to taking combination therapy. Largely the sort of things that we would be looking out for were side effects from things like efavirenz and just doing some switching around so people had more options and less side effects, and everything felt a lot more palatable and easier to manage. However, I think for people that were diagnosed, pre sort of 2015, and this is just my opinion, it's nothing scientific, there's still an awful lot of physical changes, emotional sort of psychosocial issues that, people getting older, all those things are really impacting. And that's why I quite often say now that there are, excuse me, there are really two paths, and if you were diagnosed with HIV today, absolutely one pill once a day, live well. Carry on with your life as it was. But arguably, the reason we're in this position are for people maybe like yourself, David, who took all the trials, the horrible side effect drugs, the drugs that gave you lipoatrophy, all those things that now mean that you are living a different life moving into older age than you probably would have done if you'd have been diagnosed more recently.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about that. It's a kind of interesting thing after 2015, isn't it? Because I still have that fear because I was diagnosed in 2002. So I've still got those things about if I lose weight, I might have I'll have got AIDS and stuff like that. So it's those kind of things, isn't it? I still
Yeah.
have going on. So yeah.
It's a lot of there's so much psychology attached to an HIV diagnosis. And my colleague and I were sort of talking about that a while ago. And we said, that if you're giving somebody an HIV diagnosis, you're almost handing them a suitcase full of history, shame, guilt. And even though you could be the best clinician in the world, with, you know, talking positively and all that, all those things, which I'm sure, you know, I know everybody does, there's still that whole social legacy and, you know, the iterations of the gravestones and all the other things that people talk about and the stigma. And, you know, until somebody can sit in a waiting room and say, I've got why are you here? Oh, I've got HIV, without there being an affect, that's still the biggest hurdle that all of us, you know, including people like myself who I'm not living with HIV, but work closely with people, that's our biggest hurdle, isn't it? Is to just get to a point where an HIV diagnosis isn't attached to so much emotional context, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does, because the early sort of the campaign that the government did under Lord Norman Fowler was a fear-based campaign, wasn't it? And that fear, although it was a very strong motivating factor, that has carried on to stigmatise people living with HIV even today. People who are newly diagnosed are still, but it's perverse, because some people, I've been asked, oh, HIV, is that still a thing? Yes, it is. Yeah, people just think it's gone away because of the success of antiretroviral therapy, but it very much is a thing.
Yeah, and I think what worries me more is that when I've been in non-HIV clinical forums talking about HIV, there, even within those forums, there is a perception that HIV is not an issue anymore. So GP forums, you know, and you don't have to go very far outside of Brighton to experience, or, you know, from a city centre, you know, we're incredibly lucky with our sort of locality and, you know, the access that people have to various HIV organisations. But you don't have to travel far outside of a city for the conversation and the beliefs and the acceptance to really be a very, very different conversation. It's really difficult, because, you know, I know somebody who's a tattooist, and they just started a new job, and they were being interviewed by a health and safety officer from the local council, and they were asked, do you routinely ask people about their HIV status? And the tattooist said, well, I don't need to, because, you know, we practice universal precautions. And the health and safety officer said, yes, but it's better to know, isn't it?
Well, you should treat everybody as though they've got a bloodborne infection. Yeah.
You need to know what you're dealing with is what I think they actually
said. That's the judgment.
Yeah, so, you know, it's just that I've never once had to walk into a setting and think about my health status and what I am prepared to say and what I'm not prepared to say without, you know, it's not even a thing for me. So, you know, for somebody to walk into a healthcare setting and have to judge whether it's safe to share, will I be heard? Will it make sense as well? Because arguably lots of people don't actually want, you know, they're quite afraid of having conversations around HIV because, you know, it's always been quite a closed off specialty. So I think we've got to a point now where we've sort of done people a disservice in a way, because now everyone's going, no, go and see this doctor and that specialist. And but you told me not to. 20 years.
So let's go back to the Sussex Beacon a little bit. So obviously the Sussex Beacon was built as a hospice and then sort of had to transition into more of a care centre with an inpatient unit attached. For, you know, you had to be living with HIV to attend that and be referred to that unit, didn't you?
So we know that, you know, if we were just purely caring for HIV as a condition, what we know now with antiretroviral therapy, if it was just HIV, then the Sussex Beacon wouldn't need to exist. However, What we know is that for a majority of people, and it's a small majority, but it's a, you know, still significant numbers, living with HIV is really complex. It's really difficult to navigate life. It's isolating. And the Sussex Beacon, as I said earlier, has really evolved its care so that it can support really the most vulnerable people within our county, with some of the most complex psychosocial, physical affects that have been really exacerbated by a diagnosis of HIV. So lots of mental health, lots of crisis prevention. We support people who are using alcohol. We support the local acute trust for early step down care, admission avoidance, all those things. So arguably the umbrella and the predeterminant for admission is that you need to be living with HIV, and then everything else, then we really just look at a very person-centered and holistic way of supporting people. The other thing that lots, I think many people don't really appreciate is that lots of people living with HIV, and especially our sort of demographic in Brighton, which is predominantly gay and bisexual men who have sex with men, is that they don't have that family network around them. So if I had to go into a hospital, I've got children, I've got still got my parents, and I've got a strong network around me that would be able to support me to go home and would be able to look after me and care for me should I need it. For lots of people, you know, of course people have friendship groups, but calling on a friend to provide you with a level of care is a big ask. So, you know, that in a way the Beacon has become a family member for a lot of people. In the absence of their own family, whether it's, you know, for whatever reason.
I mean, there is, I mean, I've heard people refer to their HIV family, and I really do value my HIV family. My real blood relative families are hundreds of miles away, and but my family here is all sorts of different people. People you wouldn't normally meet in normal areas of life, but that's so. I really value that though, to just to meet people from different walks of life, different, you know, migrants and different sexualities and different genders, and just to learn their stories. And it's a you know, the one common bond we have is HIV, and we know that. And we, you know, ideally, we don't discriminate because the virus doesn't, and we're all, you know, we do support each other as a community. The HIV community in Brighton, I think, is fantastic.
What's really amazing is that, you know, if you have somebody that comes to the Sussex Beacon for an admission for the first time, what I used to say to them was, you're going to spend the first 48 hours wondering why you're here. And then you will relax into it, and it's fairly predictable that they say yes, I absolutely wanted to leave, but the friendships and the impact of being able to sit with somebody who's experienced really similar life, you know, life journey or HIV journey, whether you're a Black African woman talking to a white British man, gay man, you know, those relationships are so, so important. And I think that's, you know, one of the biggest impacts that that the inpatient unit has had for people, definitely, especially if they've been newly diagnosed and had a long hospital admission, to be able to come and spend time with people and just talk about that experience is invaluable.
It's community, isn't it? Can we have a song, the office track song, please? See, please, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Two songs, haven't you?
Yeah, so my first track is Ain't No Stopping Us Now by McFadden and Whitehead, and I chose this because it was probably one of the first songs that I absolutely loved And I used to, if ever I was out, you'd suddenly see me launch myself onto the dance floor. But now I think actually the words are really align themselves with the Sussex Beacons journey. And I play it now with a very different mindset. And I do think there ain't no stopping us now.
Welcome back to the HIV on 97.2 FM and DAB Plus. If you want to contact us, you can contact us at our email, info@hivhour.org. Go to our website, hiv.org.uk. Have a look at that. It's a great website. We are sponsored by the lovely Jack Russell Technologies as well. So, yes. Yeah. Thank you very much. That's a great track, that, wasn't it? I love that track.
Well, yeah. So Tracy, there was some bad news recently, about a year ago. The Sussex Beacon was forced to close its inpatient unit. But you're here to come on the show to tell us some good news.
Yeah, so it was actually 2 years ago. So we closed a year ago, but we were given the news quite a long time before that. So, yeah, it's been a very difficult time. However, we have had some very fruitful conversations with the NHS Sussex, which is now NHS Surrey and Sussex, and we have been recommissioned. So we are going to be reopening on the 23rd of March 2027, which is the exact day 33 years ago that the Sussex Beacon opened its doors.
Oh, really?
So it's a very, very poignant day.
yeah, auspicious even. Yeah. Yes. So and the offer you've been commissioned for is slightly different to why is the Sussex Beacon inpatient unit reopening and who is it for?
I think what's really important is to acknowledge that the commissioners that we have been working with. They met with our service users and they were really impressed and also really saw the benefits of the Sussex Beacon and the impact it has on people living with HIV within the county. And I think that it has been really used as a model of best practice. And I think that it's an absolute celebration and, you know, testament to my colleagues and our CEO, Rachel Brett, for being able to navigate what has been arguably some of the most challenging conversations I've had in my 40-year nursing career. So, yes, lots to celebrate. And so they are commissioning 6 beds for HIV. And we are going to use our spare capacity to open that those beds out to the LGBTQ plus community for palliative and end of life care. This was feedback that we got from service users because I think there was, you know, there's obviously always change is very difficult and doing something different. Can be difficult for people to digest, but I think the importance is that, you know, hopefully at some point in the future, people living with HIV won't need services like the Sussex Beacon, and being able to hand it back to the community that built it is really important to us at the Sussex Beacon. So that's what our focus is. And, you know, closing a ward is much easier than reopening it. So unfortunately we had to make all our clinical staff except myself and my colleague Jackie redundant, so we are really starting from the ground up again. We need basically 30 years worth of upgrade because, you know, money hasn't been spent on the Beacon for very many years. So it is she's looking a little bit tired and shabby. So we want to welcome people back into a new, welcoming, fit for purpose building. And that's not something, we don't want it to not look like the Sussex Beacon. And I think it's really important to us and to our service users that this, there's a familiarity to coming to the Beacon. But we want it, you know, we want things to be really higher end than it is now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And we've got a fundraising campaign that's just been launched, because, you know, obviously these things cost ridiculous amounts of money, and our funding from the NHS doesn't really cover the whole lot of the refurbishment. So, yeah, there's a launch of a big campaign. So if anybody wants to donate any money...
Yes, go to sussexbeacon.org.uk. And I think it was yeah. worth saying, actually, that the Sussex Beacon has never been fully paid to provide the inpatient service. It has always had to meet the shortfall itself with its own fundraising activities and obviously the fantastic Brighton Half Marathon as well. So yeah. I think that's the same for most hospices, isn't it? That they never get what it costs to run.
Yeah, we're no different from any of the other hospices. I think, you know, fortunately we've now joined Hospice UK, and that's fantastic. So, you know, hopefully things will turn around for us. You know, it's sort of, sometimes it's three steps forwards and five steps back, but we're moving in the right direction, which is amazing.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm still a service user at the Sussex Beacon. I go to the mindfulness class. So I've noticed improvements in the building already. So the garden is a lot safer to use. The patio stones aren't uneven. I noticed the lift has been completely refurbished, because obviously the unit is on the first floor, so you've got to be able to wheel in beds in and out, haven't you, when you're accepting patients from hospital and that.
Yes. Exactly.
You know, the boilers, everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got some of our beds are potentially 30 years old. The flooring needs changing. The bathrooms need upgrading. We need to be, you know, considerate of people who might have, who might be visually impaired, people that might have cognitive issues.
Yes.
You know, we've got the oldest cohort of people living with HIV in Europe within Brighton. So we've got, you know, we've got to make sure that this is a space that is safe and therapeutic, but also a nice place to actually be in.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, we know there's lots of more people now with dementia, just not HIV, necessarily HIV related, but because we know we're, you know, I mean, I think well over half of us are over 50. It might be well over half of us are over 60, I think. I am just plucking figures out of the air, but I know you're absolutely right. We have an aging cohort. And so end of life care for HIV has come back again, the need for it, but not because of AIDS. It's just because of the natural aging process, yeah. Isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the challenges that has really sort of reared itself to me is that actually we don't talk about dying as part of our, you know, as a culture, we don't talk about dying. Mm. And I think what we really need to start doing is talking about advanced care planning and respect forms, because it is something that happens to all of us. But equally, yeah. So many people have had a death conversation when they were diagnosed. Mm. And so, you know, the fear and the triggering for people having to sort of revisit the idea that, you know, that they will ultimately die is really difficult. But I think it's such an important conversation that we need to start easing people into, because there's nothing worse than suddenly somebody being taken ill and they've never written down what they want at the end yeah. of their life, or if yeah. they become incapacitated, or if their health changes. So, you know, this is a bit like writing a will when you're in your 40s. You'd think, well, I don't need it yet. But, you know, it's just that sort of personal housekeeping, if you like.
It's normalising it, isn't it? Really, and making sure that people know what to do and where to go with it. Because I know Taryn Siggins do a course like that, don't they?
Yes.
Who the Taryn Siggins? They do a thing with what's the
to Marie Curie.
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just no, and I did the course as well. It's just normalising it, like you say.
Yeah, and we've been having conversations with the Claire Project, and one of their ex sort of co-workers is a death doula, and it's absolutely fascinating, and just the ease in which they can sort of navigate and support somebody to have a conversation around it. It's a bit, you know, it's a bit like talking about, I don't know, something, and people say, oh, don't mention, it's like taking the pill in the 60s, don't mention that, everyone will go off and have sex. They didn't. You know, and it's just all those conversations that people get nervous around, and I think it's really important to just try and normalize it, so that when the time does come, or if somebody has a diagnosis, which means they're, you know, a life-limiting diagnosis, then at least they know with confidence that they will be asked about their wishes.
Oh, it's fantastic news. So you say 23rd of March?
23rd of March.
23rd of March, 2027. Yeah. And the refurbishments will all have been done by then. So, you know, if you notice building works happening, don't worry, it's happening. It is happening. Staff are being recruited, I suppose, any moment now.
Yeah, we'll be putting job adverts out within the next probably couple of months, you know, just to start getting the ball rolling. So it's all very exciting slash terrifying.
Ain't no stopping you now, is there?
No. Yeah. So we'll finish off with a song in a moment with your second choice. Just very quickly, are there any sort of, so this is your fourth time working at the Beacon. Can you tell us a funny story about what's happened? You must have seen so many fun things.
Oh, God. Let me think of a funny story. So probably my funniest story is one of the first night shifts that I had to work when I first started working here. So it would have been about 1999. And I was working with an agency staff member. And it was at the time where we had a smoking room for staff, which was downstairs and on the ground floor in a porter cabin. It was an absolute joy to go in there. Anyway, they wanted to go for a cigarette, and I took them out there, and I forgot to put the catch up of the lock, and the door slammed behind the both of us, so both locked out of the building. So I went into the garden, and I found a ladder. So, if people don't know, that on the first floor there are balconies all around. So I got the ladder and propped it up against the communal lounge balcony and suddenly climbed up it, and then suddenly launched myself into the lounge where there were service users all sat around the table and they wanted to put their hands.
Yeah, it's like a proper Romeo and Juliet type thing. Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
So, I mean, I have to say, my career here is absolutely in the bones of my body. And I can remember when I first started working here, sitting in the nursing handover, and I was just so overwhelmed with the level of care that the nurses were providing for the people, especially, you know, sort of towards the end of, you know, the pandemic. And that, I think that's what's really stayed with me. It's just the care that people get, where you're seen as you said, David, seen as a human being, treated with respect and dignity, regardless of your lifestyle choices or, you know, where you live, how you choose to live.
Yeah.
You know, that to me has just literally stayed with me my whole career.
So that you've just been listening to L'Origine da Costa by Ludovico Einaudi, and that was a song choice from our wonderful guest Tracy Buckingham from the Sussex Beacon. And what fantastic news that the Sussex Beacon will be reopening the inpatient ward on the 23rd of March 2027. So that's a real date for us all, the whole community, to look forward to. And sorry, it seemed to cut off a bit short with our interview there with Tracy, but the laws of the internet meant we ran out of time. So welcome to the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM in the Brighton and Hove area and on DAB Plus Radio. Our email address is info@hivhour.org.uk. So if you've got a song choice, if you'd like to dedicate a song to somebody, or if you've got an idea for a news item or something we can feature, please do email us. And that email address again is info@hivhour.org.uk. And our website is hivhour.org.uk. .org.uk as well. Don't forget, you can listen to our podcasts soon after the show has aired, and there's also a listen again page on radioreverb.com which has the music as well, if you like music. We've got some HIV news, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Yeah, the Lancet HIV Commission have done a report on aging. So they're the highlights, what they've put about global HIV, how the global HIV epidemic is changing. So in 2025, an estimated 11.5 million people living with HIV were aged 50 years and older.
Really?
So that's 25%.
Wow. Really?
This is expected to increase to 20.2 million by 2040. That would account for more than half of all people living with HIV. Crucially, 96% will live in low and middle income countries. Sub-Saharan Africa continues to shoulder the greatest burden of the global HIV epidemic. So they say that much of the change reflects the success of antiviral therapy, which we know about, don't we? Talk about it. And that's enabled millions of people who have acquired HIV early in their life to grow older. The challenge has gone beyond helping people live longer to ensure their age well, that they maintain a good health regime, independence and quality of life throughout their older age. I mean, we were talking about that with Tracy, weren't we, about getting older? And
we were, yeah. I mean, I know people in their 80s living with HIV, and that's just fantastic. I mean, you know, some of them have had HIV for over half their life, you know, over 40 years. And it just shows you the success of antiretroviral therapy and the importance of getting tested. You can't get that antiretroviral therapy unless you test folks. So, I mean, I know a lot of our listeners to this show are living with HIV, but this show is also for people who aren't living with HIV. You know,
well, that's the thing, isn't it, David? The focus is on younger people testing and campaigning, but people who are, I think some people think that when you get over a certain age, you don't have sex.
Oh no, that's not true at all. True for me. Yeah. I've stopped.
Bad me, but that's how the campaigning's going. It's like for younger people. So you see a lot of young people on posters and stuff, but older people still do have sex.
I mean, especially. I'm not one to speak for women, but you know, once you've gone through the menopause, you don't have to worry about the risk of getting pregnant anymore. And so, you know, there's almost like a second flush, if you like. So I've been told by some of my female friends that, you know, they can enjoy a sex life well into their 60s, 70s, 80s. And why not?
Yeah, exactly. So the data from this commission, from the Lancet Commission, from more than 7,000 adults, 40 years and older, in Kenya and South Africa, so that was rural and urban populations, the findings show that older adults are not one uniform population, like you just said. HIV risk was shaped by gender, education, socioeconomic circumstances, and place where you live. Widowed women had the highest HIV prevalence at 30.8%. So that can reflect economic insecurity and persistent gender inequalities. Stigma and ageism, that's what we were just talking about again, compound the problem.
So if anyone is interested, so just search the internet for Lancet HIV Commission on Aging and HIV. And there's the full report there. And also there's a really good video, actually. It's only about 5 minutes long, but I'll see if we can get permission to play the audio from that on air. Because I think it just it's obviously it's got experts talking, and I'm just a lay person, so yeah, it's probably
Well,
better
one
to
last
have a
thing
conversation.
before we move on.
Yeah, do.
Just they say they're looking ahead. Aging with HIV has come from wealthier settings. So, as like I said, all the statistics at the beginning, more than half of people living with HIV are over 50 are living in Africa. So it's trying to get to them and get their response and prepare them for growing older. If you've got money, you can. It's a lot easier than if you haven't, isn't it? I suppose, in a way. So that, yeah. So that's interesting, isn't it?
It is, So,
So,
community news? Got some community
yeah.
news?
So I'll just go ahead with
Yeah.
this. I know
Oh,
you've
yeah, go
got a
on,
part
talk.
of. So the HIV charity. This is a local. This is UK news. Which is St George's Trust have sensitive health data stolen. So have you heard this, David?
Oh, hackers. Yeah, naughty hackers. Yeah, so it's the George House Trust.
Yeah.
Hackers have breached the data center, so lots of companies, lots of charities have their data stored by companies. And this company was called The Beacon, and it's not to do nothing to do with the Sussex Beacon. But anyway, hackers
No,
broke it.
it's a
Yeah,
cyber.
and it's completely
It's
it's just a coincidence.
a technology
But
company.
yeah, but
Okay.
the data holders were hacked, and people's personal details, including health.
The hackers, they've downloaded it, but none of the they've not published anything. So just if you're worrying about it, the breach is part of a wider cybersecurity incident, potentially affecting up to 1,500 charities across the UK. So it's not
Really?
just, yeah, it's scary,
Yeah,
isn't it?
it is. Yeah, and it makes you wonder, what information do you trust your charities with? But I mean, obviously they need your data in order to have your name and address and email address and things like that. But it's a tricky one, isn't it? It's evil when people do that, but at least
I
it
don't
hasn't
understand
been
it.
published. At least it hasn't been published so
I
far.
just don't get it. Don't get this. It's just.
So that was the George House Trust. We had guests on, so they work in Liverpool and Manchester, don't they? But there's been some good news also from the George House Trust. They thanked everybody online recently for the candlelight vigil, which was held at Manchester Village Pride over August Bank Holiday weekend. And so there were performers and speakers and volunteers, photographers, and they managed to raise a fantastic £12,500 for the George House
Brilliant.
Trust and their essential work in supporting people living with HIV. So yeah, so it's a bit of a bad story, but some great news as well, showing you that the collective community at Manchester are really supporting their HIV charity.
I wouldn't worry about their data implement, as St George's Trust. I think they've got it in hand and they're looking into it, I think. You've got professionals looking into it. So yeah, I'm trying not to worry about that. Yeah, it's what happens this year,
It's
isn't it?
just
It's
yeah, with everything going online, that's still, people have to
just
keep
have to protect yourself as
yeah,
much as possible.
it's not, nothing we can do really as people, but it's obviously these cybersecurity
Yeah.
experts that have got to keep it all safe for us.
So another bit of information, a bit of community news. Our very own Angelina
Oh
is,
yes.
yes, she's. They are doing a free online event, and that's going to be on the 24th of September between 12:30 p.m. and 1:30, and it's Meet the Author. So Angelina's been part of a group team that's written a book called Living Well with HIV, a psychological, social, medical, and personal guide. So yeah, I'll just go in. So it's with clinical psychologist Michael Mvangeli. I forgot Mvangeli. I think I've got that right. And HIV consultant Dr. Rachel Jones. So they've collaborated together. You can meet one of the authors at this event. Any questions you can send over to them as well before, and they'll sort that out. So if you're interested, go to the British Psychological Society website, which is bps.org.uk. Go to events, which is at the top of the screen, and you can scroll down to Meet the Author, Living Well with HIV, and you can register online there, so you have all the information.
Yeah, good. And also the book is available, the book in question is available as paperback for £19.99. And apparently it's been designed for people living with HIV, their loved ones and healthcare professionals. And it serves as an invaluable resource for counsellors, mental health practitioners and health and social care workers, because obviously living with HIV can be a complex condition.
Yeah.
So that's really important. So fantastic. Angelina has really sort of represented us and speaking to the authors and making sure our voices are heard accurately and that our needs are catered for. So yeah, well done, Angelina. And I'm sure we'll have her on the show and get her to talk about how the event went.
That'd be good, actually. Yeah, that would be good. Sam, yeah, we'll sort it out. So David, the Charles Street Tap, which is in Brighton, which has been going for well over 20 odd years, which is a bar in Brighton, they're closed last week, which is a shame. But they did a fundraiser, and Terence Higgins Trust were there, and they raised well over £900 for Terence Higgins Trust. So that was good. Yeah. So.
Oh, good. Yeah, yeah. So I saw the Richard Angel, the CEO, on internet talking about the LGBT venues need to be looked after really by our community because they're closing, aren't they? It's the difficulty of running bars and things like that, and it's obviously where lots of people meet as a community.
Well, they always do. I mean, the Charles Street Tap always did the after event, after the World AIDS Day vigil on the 1st of December. So,
more national news. On the 21st of November of this year, there is the Red Run, and that's in Victoria Park in London. And the website for that is redrun.org.uk, and this is a race, if you like. It can be a walk. It's 5k or 10k. It's completely accessible by wheelchair, and it raises money for charities, HIV charities across the UK. So the Sussex Beacon is one of the charities that benefits, and the George House Trust and Terence Higgins Trust all benefit from this run. So it says 10k or 5k. You can walk it, run it, or chasse it if you want. You can bring your dog as well. Yeah. So I think the registration costs are £28, and that within that processing sort of fee, you get your Red Run T-shirt, you get a tote bag, you get a medal, you get tea and coffee, you get a walk number, you get a community heroes guide, and entertainment. So it's a good fun day. So if you've got people that want to come and support you in that, please get them to go along. You don't have to fundraise if you don't want to, but your entrance fee just covers the cost of running the event. So if you don't fundraise, no charities get any extra money. Your registration fee covers the cost of the event. So get people to sponsor you for a mile, for a kilometre or something, a pound for a kilometre or something like that. Pretty sure that some of our presenters in London are going to take part. We know. Philip Dehaney, our fantastic presenter, is a great runner and has done half marathons and things. And hopefully we may have a presence there ourselves or have people reporting back from that. So all ages, all abilities are welcome to take part. It raises not only money, but it raises awareness and celebrates the progress and advocates for continued support living for people with HIV. So that's another animal story. So great. There it is. So 21st of November for that. More locally, this Saturday, the 5th of September at midday, is the Lunch Positive event in Eastbourne.
Oh, yes.
Monthly event. So the venue it's not secret, but please contact Lunch Positive if you wish to attend if you've not been before. Yeah, it's a different venue. It's not the Brighton venues. This is the one in Eastbourne, but well worth attending to meet people in Eastbourne living with HIV and support each other.
And the Fridays, obviously the normal Lunch Positive at Dorset Gardens as well. So
yes,
go down there for your lunch. I think we're going down, aren't we?
We are this week, yeah, and we're no doubt going to have somebody from Lunch Positive coming on the show very, very soon.
We'll talk about World AIDS Day as well, which is coming up very soon as well.
Yeah. I saw Christmas cards in the shops this week.
I know.
Yeah. It's not too soon to talk about World AIDS Day. Maybe too soon for some people for Christmas, but World AIDS Day is well worth supporting because it not just raises money, but awareness, and also commemorating the people that we've lost and celebrating the progress we've made.
Absolutely.
Gosh, what a fantastic show that was. I mean, what a great guest we had.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks, Tracy, for coming on. That's great.
So thank you, Tracy.
And
great song choices. And we're going to finish with The Chain by Fleetwood Mac. So thanks for listening, folks.
Great track.
Cheerio. Bye.
See you again. Bye.